Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Due to the themes of this podcast, listener discretion is advised. Lock your doors. Close the blinds. Change your passwords. This is Secrets and Spies. Secrets and Spies is a podcast that dives into the world of espionage, terrorism, geopolitics, and intrigue. This podcast is produced and hosted by Chris Carr.
On today's podcast, we're joined by photographer and shipping enthusiast Remy Osman, who's based near Singapore. He talks to us today about how he spots and tracks Putin's shadow ships, which ship cargo and oil in violation of international sanctions. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Take care.
The opinions expressed by guests on Secrets and Spies do not necessarily represent those of the producers and sponsors of this podcast.
Remy, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. Pleased to be here.
Excellent. Well, for the benefit of listeners, please can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you first sort of got into ship spotting?
Yeah, of course. So I moved to Singapore 5 years ago, and it was during COVID, as you all know. And at the time, we had what was called a stay home notice, a quarantine. I was very lucky that I was put up at the Shangri-La Hotel on Sentosa, which is kind of the beach resort island. And even though it was torture in a way that I could see the sea and see the pool, but not swim in it. But nonetheless, I had a balcony and this amazing sea view in front of me. And if any listeners have been to Singapore, they'll know there are hundreds or thousands of ships, big vessels, which pass every day. And when you land in Singapore, you see them fly. You know, when you're flying into the airport, you see them all there. And I'd never seen anything like it. And I guess I had 2 weeks with nothing to do but start really paying attention and looking. And I, you know, downloaded the ship spot tracking app on my phone. I started taking photos of them. I started making connections of, you know, what's an oil tanker, what's a bulk carrier, what's a container ship. Oh, that's the biggest container ship in the world. You know, it became a real interest and a real hobby for me. So I'd been posting these photos on Instagram for the past 5 years, very much as a hobby connected to, you know, a couple of hundred people who may have had a similar interest. Earlier this year, we see in the news a lot about the shadow fleet, particularly vis-a-vis Russia, but also Iran as well. And 2025 has been a year where we hear a lot about Russia and Iran in the news. And it was really a friend of mine who just asked me, oh, can you see any of these from where you are? And I'd never really thought about that question, but I made a point of looking up, you know, where these tankers are, what they are, how you identify them. And sure enough, when you know what you're looking for, you see these happening pretty much every day. I mean, even just a couple of hours ago, I was up on my roof taking a photo of a Russian shadow fleet tanker, which was coming past. So that's really how it all started. It was as a development of a hobby. And of course, you know, once I've posted some of these pictures, there's been a bit more interest in these, given the kind of clandestine and slightly illicit nature of what's happening. And yeah, kind of really gone from there.
Oh, cool. And was there a specific moment when you realized these ships were not what they appear to be? And how did that feel? Because I used to have a radio a long time ago where I could pick up these like number stations, and suddenly I heard one in real time and it was kind of creepy. I don't know how you felt about seeing these shadow ships.
For me, in a way, visually, they just look totally normal. But it's when you begin to realize actually what they're claiming they are, where they say they're going, doesn't make any sense. So you'd have a ship saying we're traveling from Saudi Arabia to China, but actually it's going from east to west. It's sailing in completely the opposite direction. And that's a bit strange to see once you begin noticing these vessels doing that. Or equally, there was a particular one, which I think is one of the reels that you linked, but, you know, a vessel which it was claiming to have a certain name. But then when I looked up that ship to try and work out, you know, who owned it, where it was coming from, it turns out that that ship had been scrapped a couple of years ago. So there was something claiming to be one thing. And actually, when you look, it's not the case. So I wouldn't have said it was creepy, but it's certainly very, very interesting. And to be able to see that really with my own eyes, you know, so in the open, particularly from Singapore, where you don't really see criminality ever, even on a very, very low level, was really fascinating.
Mm. And for listeners sort of unfamiliar with the term, sort of, can you explain what kind of ghost ships are in the Russian shadow fleet?
Sure. So the terms that I use are shadow fleet as the kind of all-encompassing word, and then it's kind of interchangeably sometimes called a ghost fleet, but then they're also what are called zombie ships, which are every zombie ship is part of the shadow fleet, but not every shadow tanker is a zombie ship. So the shadow fleet, in its broadest term, is all of these vessels which are sort of operating outside of international maritime law and international maritime norms. So every vessel really should, you know, should be insured in a certain way, should have certain standards of safety, should have, it's called AIS, but it's where you kind of broadcast your position and your destination. There's certain standards that these ships should have. And the shadow fleet operates outside of this. So often it's vessels which have been bought by a shadowy owner, and it typically transports oil for Russia, Iran, Venezuela, and it's outside of international norms because these countries are under sanctions, and that's the reason why it happens. And then a zombie ship specifically, as I mentioned, is a vessel which has sort of come back from the dead, by which I mean it's a ship which claims to be have the name and what's called the IMO number, the International Maritime Organization number of a certain ship, but actually the ship that it's claiming to be or scrapped previously, it was totally dismantled, taken apart. So they're really laundering the identity of a completely different vessel in order to hide who they are and hide which ship that is and who their owners are, which I find particularly interesting because that's a whole other layer of deception going on.
Yeah, it was a bit like when undercover agents sort of take on the identity of a dead child to become somebody else. It's kind of a similar kind of thing, isn't it?
Yes. It's a kind of identity theft.
Yeah, wow. And so some of these ships then, they're kind of, well, I wouldn't say they're unseaworthy, but they're kind of past their shelf life, some of them, aren't they? So they're probably quite dangerous and likely to have a problem.
It's certainly a risk. So they typically tend to be much older. Mm. So that can be anywhere from 15, 20, 25 years old. They don't have the same standards in terms of safety. They're not insured in the same way. So, you know, the big kind of nightmare scenario, as I understand it, is, you know, if a ship going past Singapore were to somehow collide with another vessel, there was a big oil spill, it blocked the strait, then, you know, all of that salvage effort, all of that cleanup effort, who pays for it? You know, and it could really disrupt global trade enormously in the worst case scenario. So that's one of the reasons why they are a bit of a concern. And, you know, that potentially environmental risk, they typically do things which are deemed not particularly safe in terms of transferring oil between vessels. So they really just operate outside of the norms of international shipping.
Yeah. And these vessels are just exporting oil. They're not exporting like weapons or anything else, are they? Do we know?
The vast majority is oil. There are some bulk carriers which kind of transport coal or iron ore that typically tends to be Iranian linked, and that's just saying, you know, it's a commodity for export, which a buyer, even though Iran's under sanctions, you'll get a buyer of that commodity, and that's obviously useful revenue for that regime.
Yeah.
People have asked me before about weapons or drugs or even human trafficking. I've never seen any evidence of that in terms of what I'm looking at. That's not to say it doesn't happen, but simply, you know, the ships that I'm seeing are oil tankers or bulk carriers. And I think Occam's razor, it would make sense to put oil in an oil tanker because you can make a lot of money selling a whole cargo of oil. So I don't presume that sort of carrying drugs or anything like that. Mm, mm, mm. It wouldn't make sense to do it like that. But of course, there will be some vessels doing that sort of activity. I don't know where they are. I haven't knowingly ever seen that.
Yeah, thank you for that. So what are the telltale signs you look for when identifying a suspicious ship or tanker?
The first step I take is always just to see what the flag, the registered flag of the tanker is. And there are certain countries which are not regular maritime nations, which seem to have, either due to kind of a lack of oversight, sometimes due to corruption, for all sorts of reasons, have these shadow fleet tankers registered under those countries' maritime registries. So as a particular example, at one point there were lots of vessels popping up that had the, I need to double check my facts, but I believe it was the flag of Mozambique, which actually doesn't have any vessels registered in it. There's no merchant navy or commercial fleets in Mozambique, but it turns out that there was an individual who was just accepting cash payments to put it on the register, and then that quickly got stepped down when people saw it. But you know, it's constant cat and mouse game to try and register ships under the registries of kind of countries which have a lot less oversight. So the ones that I very commonly see would be the Gambia, Comoros, other African and kind of Caribbean countries, which aren't the normal countries that you see ships regularly registered under. And then after that, it's actually really just a case of seeing what the IMO number of that vessel is, and then do a cross-reference between published lists of sanctioned ships. And actually, even with Google, that's quite easy to do. You know, if it's on the American sanctioned ship registry, it would normally show up quite quickly. An old ship with an unusual flag is 9 times out of 10 a sanctioned vessel, which is why I say, actually, when you know what you're looking for, they're quite easy to spot.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, you recently posted an example where there were two different ships that were pretending to be the same vessel. Can you sort of talk us through how you discovered and spotted the discrepancies?
Yeah, so that was a really interesting example of a zombie ship. There was a ship called Latitude, I believe, with a certain IMO number. It had been scrapped somewhere in Bangladesh, I think, in 2022. And that IMO number was not actually on any registry of sanctioned ships, because it was a real ship. It was a legitimate ship. It just got scrapped. And then suddenly it appears back and I saw it. But it's a ship that kind of shouldn't exist anymore. So I think that it's the most viral post I've ever made. I said, this ship does not exist. You know, it's back from the dead, which obviously catches interest. So that's how I saw it. It's kind of just coincidence. You know, I just happened to be looking, and that's one that really stood out.
What was really notable about that was that it came back.
It passed Singapore a second time, so I was ready to photograph it a second time. And then when I looked at my photo, I went, hang on a minute, it looks different. The shape of the ship architecture is different. The funnel is completely different. It just wasn't the shape. It wasn't the same physical vessel. So that there are at least two ships which are using that same scrapped ship's registration numbers to hide who they really are. And actually, I've spoken to a couple of real experts. You know, we track this using exact light imagery and all sorts, and they think that there are actually maybe three or four of them using the same data, which is really interesting. So
wow.
I hope I can one day photograph the third one and maybe the fourth one if it comes fast.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that if you're not specifically looking for the ship out at sea, and it's only when it kind of comes into a port that it's at risk of really being detected and seen as being potentially a zombie ship. Is that right? So you could, in theory, then have these four ships of the same identity.
Exactly. And that's the reason why what I'm doing, I think, is of interest to some people, because there are not that many places where they pass that have large population centers. And if you imagine the physical sea route you take from somewhere in the Middle East or from a Russian port to the Far East, most of the time it's just in the high ocean. And it's only that very, very narrow strait where you've got Singapore and then Indonesia on the other side that you can just physically get that close to them to have such a close look. So, you know, I imagine if I hadn't happened to be looking for these, they could have done it, undetected for quite a long time, and maybe people wouldn't have realized that there were multiple ones, or certainly not so openly in the public yet.
Oh, that's crazy, isn't it? So you've sent me some really great examples, and so I've got to just quickly have a look at each one. So anybody who's listening to us, you might want to come onto YouTube, because I'll share these. So the first one here is... So the first one is the ships that are lying about their identities, that they're both using the same IMO number. So do you want to talk us through this post?
Yeah, so that's exactly the one that I was just talking about. So if you look, they're both painted in a very similar way, but actually the funnel of one of them is black, the funnel of the other one is white. They're two funnels, as it were, on the one at the bottom. So that's the visual example, you know, just... You're just glancing at it, you might think it's the same ship, but when you look more closely, they are actually different. So that was that one. Just as a side note of interest, and I don't think I'm saying anything I'm not meant to, but I happened to be with a local news crew the day that came the second time, and they had a really, really good camera. They could get very close to it, and I just thought, oh, it's such bad luck that the first one. You know, they're two ships using the same identity. The first one I happened to see, and it happened to go very viral, you know, 2+ million people seeing it. And then the second one with the same name, I happened to be the news crew at the time. You know, they're so we'll see what happens with the third one, but if it ever comes across.
Yes, yeah, that's hilarious. Oh, yeah, I bet there were some quite angry people on that ship. So then we've got the second one here is this ship does not exist. This must be the zombie ship you mentioned.
Exactly. So that same ship is on the first reel that I sent you. It's the bottom one there. But yeah, this is just the one I mentioned, which, yeah, for whatever reason, you know, that seemed to particularly capture people's interest. It got shared a lot. And yeah, a lot of people discovered my page, possibly even including you, Chris, thanks to this particular reel. And I think it just really shows the kind of human interest in this. You know, it's one thing when you read about it happening on the news, but to actually see it coming to life, it's a real ship, it's really there, there are really people on board, and they're doing this activity, and the reasons why they're behaving like that, I think has been really interesting for people to see.
Intriguing to know, like, to what extent the crew kind of know what they're doing.
It's a good question. My understanding is that they probably would know, but and this is going more into personal opinion, but you know, there are always these instances in which there are people who, you know, they're trying to earn an honest living, as it were. You know, they haven't got so many choices. And I imagine there's some people who are very complicit and others happy to probably get paid more for what they're doing. And there are others who it's just a job that's the job they've been asked to do. And, you know, seeing recently Ukraine has been targeting and blowing up or bombing some of these ships, and yeah, you know, there are people on board that whose lives are in the firing line by virtue of what they're doing and them being involved.
Yeah.
I did have a sailor from an Iranian ship who just sent me a message. I mean, it wasn't a particularly polite message on Instagram. But you know, I just kind of replied saying, like, smile next time you pass, I'll try and take a picture of you. But,
so you've been getting messages from the crews of these ships who spotted you on Instagram?
It's the only time, but I'm not sure whether
Wow.
I don't even recall if I were to have taken a picture of his personal ship or he was just involved with it. But yeah, it was a little bit like, you know, F you can't stop us. And I said, look, just smile, let me know next time we're coming past, I'll take a picture. Better.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. God, it's a funny thing. I mean, you're going to become a bit of a local celebrity for these kind of crews and these ghost ships soon.
You never know. Like, certainly I've had very legitimate sailors, you know, on like a Maersk container ship who love it when I take a picture of the ship that they're on.
Yes.
I've become friendly with a couple of local Singaporeans who are sailors, and you know, I always try and photograph their ship. But yeah, I would love to know whether there's somebody out there who has seen that I've taken a picture of their ship, and whether they find it funny or whether you know that's a problem for them. I don't know the answer, but it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, no, I was just reading a bit before this, because these sort of ghost ships or shadow fleet, obviously they're transporting a lot of oil that's you know, useful to Russia. So I'm assuming there's quite a lot of money involved in these ships, and you know, I guess there's probably quite a bit of emotion behind someone if they start losing them or whatever.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's a huge part of what gives Russia and Iran and Venezuela, I assume, revenues. You know, it's a really, really big thing. And, you know, in theory, and we can discuss how that might happen, but it's not easy. But if this was to stop completely, it would have a hugely negative impact on the economies and the abilities to fund wars that these countries are in, which is the reason why I think it is of real interest and real relevancy as well to the world.
Yeah. The next one's where the ships have been loitering. So you took this from a plane. This is really interesting, this one.
Yes. So there are parts of the South China Sea to the east of Malaysia where all of these ships, and some of them can be quite a few hundred of them, are just there kind of at anchor I would use the word international waters, but I was told by someone that that's actually it's not a technical term. It's kind of the high seas. It's a more accurate term, but
commonly known as international waters,
yeah,
but from
a layman's term, international waters. And often if you look at satellite imagery, and I've posted certain examples of it, you see them side by side and they are literally transferring oil from one to another that way. And that's the area that they are there.
Oh, wow. In this spot. Yeah.
Those vessels, some of them may be waiting for another one to come and deliver a cargo to them. Others, you know, there may be some who are there with more legitimate purposes. I don't know. But that's the spot where that happened. And that just happened to be on a flight that went over that spot.
And with a ship-to-ship transfer, are they then transferring some of the oil to a legitimate ship, should we put it that way?
So all sorts of things can happen. Because the big risk is that it gets mixed in with real, with legitimate oil, with non-sanctioned oil. And there's a lot of activity, which I don't really know the details for, but certainly that happens, that, you know, an oil company or an oil trading firm would spend a lot of time from a compliance point of view trying to ensure that whatever is in the mix is not this oil. The extent to which they're successful, I truly don't know. So I wouldn't speculate. So that's one potential option. Often what happens is that they come and then another ship will come to meet them from a port. Very frequently China or India are buyers of this oil. And then that ship will kind of come back to its home port and then have the oil delivered. And it just sort of obscures exactly where that's been and what the source of that is, and it's a way to try and get around sanctions and that sort of thing, which is why it happens like that.
So the next one here is a Russian oil tanker, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce that name, but yeah. So talk us through that one.
Yes, so this is a very interesting one, because I mentioned previously that a lot of these tankers have kind of unusual flags or kind of the flags of random countries. There are some, such as this one, which is flies the flag of Russia, and there's some likewise in the Iranian regime's fleet which fly the Iranian flag. And these are interesting because it's very, very open what they're doing. It's a Russian oil tanker with a Russian flag carrying Russian oil in defiance of any sanctions. So that's an example of it. Now, it's really important to mention at this point that from a Singapore point of view, these ships have an absolute right under international law to pass. You know, it's not Singapore's either kind of duty, nor does it have the right to try and police this. As in, and that's on many, many levels. The most important one is that the kind of UN Convention of the Law of the Sea gives ships the absolute right to transit the Singapore Strait and the Strait of Malacca. They have the right to innocent passage. So no country, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, can get in the way of the free flow of that maritime traffic. And there'd be huge diplomatic consequences for doing that, you know, in terms of interfering with global trade, but also from a Singapore point of view, you know, we rely on the free flow of trade and vessels stopping here and getting, you know, services and everything. And that would really harm the reputation of Singapore as a maritime nation to do it. That said, a really important caveat is that they do not stop in Singapore, these ships. They are simply passing by.
Passing through.
In that narrow channel that you have the right to transit this piece of water, and they're not stopping. But there's really no right to start interfering with these ships. The only caveat to that is if they were behaving in a very, very dangerous way, you know, hypothetically.
I'm making this up, but I'm affected if it's carrying weapons which could blow up, or it's sailing in a way that could cause a collision or that sort of thing, or it's leaking oil behind it, then that's a point at which, you know, there could be an interference from either of the countries which are here.
In European waters, fun enough, some of these ships have been linked to the damage of undersea cables where they've dragged their anchor across the sea and stuff like that. So I don't know if there's been anything kind of more in Asia like that. I'm assuming not.
Not that I'm aware of. And I think that the way that I understand it, but again, this is my opinion, this is my understanding, is kind of, they're like two magnets which repel each other. These Shadow Fleet tankers don't want anything to do with Singapore, and Singapore doesn't want anything to do with them. Because, you know, if they were to stop in Singapore, for example, then they would be subject to the usual checks and inspections. And if they're not compliant and haven't got the right insurance, then the port would have an absolute right and indeed an obligation to prevent them from sailing on until all of these kind of inspections are. So they wouldn't want to be stopping here. It's the same with Indonesia or Malaysia. Again, it's not a Singapore only issue, but so it's, and you know, from a Singapore point of view, I imagine it would be very, very complicated, and you know, companies don't want to deal with these ships, because they would be subject to sanctions themselves potentially, and it's very undesirable. But because there's no other way that they can sail past other than to come past here, I happen to see them. But it's kind of, it's not part of Singapore, as it were.
Let's take a break and be right back with more. So you're photographing these ships from quite some distance. What kind of, you know, how do you do this? What kind of equipment are you using?
Yeah, sure. I've actually got it here. I've got my camera here, and you'll see it's got a big lens. It's a Nikon. It's a bridge camera, and it's got, there's a newer model available now, but it's one of the largest commercially available zoom lenses, and certainly that I can afford. Sacrificed, you know, there's a smaller sensor on it, but as a result you get a much, much longer reach. I think it's up to 2000 millimeter equivalent, which is huge. You know, it's an enormous zoom.
I
track everything just from my phone in terms of seeing what's actually physically coming, and then there's an element of a little bit of editing just to bring out the colors and to sharpen it, but it's fairly minor. So they're relatively grainy photos by virtue of the small sensor that I have. But to kind of get a very, very sharp image, I mean, it would be frightfully expensive to have that set up. Kind of, you need a really professional grade camera, which would be tens of thousands, I think.
Yeah, and also you're dealing with sort of humidity and stuff as well, which could affect visibility.
Yes, exactly. I mean, if you were to look through my whole Instagram page, there's some very rare but very, very clear days, but most days there's a haze, and some days actually I go out and I can't see anything, so I end up taking no photos.
Yeah, oh my goodness. And what's your practice? Are you just sort of like spending some time looking out for something suspicious, or do you track something on the app and it suddenly catches your attention, or are you just looking out with binoculars at random times, sort of like, oh, that looks funny, and looking it up?
Yeah, these days I tend to look specifically on the app, and then you know, I can work out with relative accuracy at the speed it's coming, what sort of time it will come. So, you know, it's not unusual that if I'm, and I shouldn't say it too loudly, but if I happen to be working from home that day, what the equivalent of a tea break would be, I quickly pop up, take a picture, and then come land. You know, the whole thing can happen in 2 or 3 minutes. If I know one's coming, then I do occasionally just go up and take a look. And, you know, it's a really nice way to relax and be kind of stretching views over the sea, but also on the other side you've got rainforests and all sorts. So yeah, it was a nice spot to be.
And what kind of distance are they, these ships, from you when you're taking these pictures?
So I believe that these are between 10-15 kilometers for most of these. Some of them I've gone much further. I think some of them are up to about 40 kilometers on a very, very clear day. But the kind of close-ups, as it were, about 10-15 kilometers away.
they're obviously very large. You know, some of these VLCCs, which stand for very large crude carrier, they're 330 odd meters long. So even though it's far away, they are physically huge objects. Hence, you can actually see them quite well, even with the naked eye. And with a zoom, you can get very close.
Yeah, fantastic. And you mentioned when we spoke before about you own a drone, but you're finding actually the drone won't be as useful as you thought it would be.
That's right. So I've bought one. I haven't really used it. The reason being that there's not really any zoom on the lens. So from here, the ships would appear as tiny little dots because they're not zoomed in. At some point, I'd love to take it out to the water, you know, either do it from the sea front, or indeed if I had, you know, got on a boat and I could fly them around other ships. I think that's allowed to do. I would actually have to double check that. But yeah, that would be really, really cool to do it. And certainly I know a few people who, you know, commercially take photos of ships and get some amazing photos from drone. So yeah, it'd be fascinating to do that with a shadow fleet tanker at some point.
And have you ever been tempted to sort of jump in a boat one day and go and get up close to one of these vessels?
Absolutely. I'd particularly like to go up to that place in the South China Sea I saw from the aeroplane and look up close, because I understand that when you go, there are all these tarpaulins which come out to cover the names and the numbers of all the ships, and I just love to see that with my own eyes and take pictures.
Yes, yeah.
That, if I'm honest, that feels like it could be more dangerous, because it just takes one high pressured hose to hit your little boat and you could have a problem. So I mean it's not close and it's not cheap either. I've looked into it. You'd have to really charter a decent sized sea growing craft. And if I've had the opportunity, I'd absolutely love that.
Yeah.
I do occasionally take a commercial boat out to the outlying islands of Singapore, and you can get very close to it. But that's also, I'm always on the lookout. At one point, I'm sure me being there will coincide with one, and I get some really, really good close-ups at one point. So I look forward to that.
Oh, fingers crossed for you. Yeah, and be careful. But yes, that sounds fun. What's the most sort of surprising thing you've learned then as a kind of amateur about how accessible this kind of open source maritime tracking really is?
I think for me, it really is, to go back to my point, just how in the open this is.
Mm.
Yes, I've put two and two together, and I'm able to quite quickly identify these ships. But truly, I need to be fairly humble that what I do isn't that difficult. You know, I could teach you how to do it, Chris, in about 5 minutes, and then you could, if you lived here, you could do the same thing. So I think, yeah, it's the fact that it's so in the open and it's so easy to spot. That's what has interested me. And you know, I saw today, for example, I'm editing the reel just before I got onto this call, a ship which is just really, really, they haven't even bothered to change where they came from, where they're going. It literally says from this port in Russia to China for orders, and it's just done very in the open, which in a way I have to respect them. That they're being completely compliant with international law, that they're very honestly and openly saying where they're coming from and where they're going, which is what they're meant to do.
Yes,
so yeah. And that's maybe the flip side, is the discrepancy between examples where it's done very in the open, and then simultaneously you have the examples of the zombie ships where they've clearly gone to great lengths to try and hide who they are and to take scratch ships' identity. And I've never quite worked out why some of them are being really open about it and others are trying but failing to hide what they're doing. And if I'm honest, I don't know what the answer to that is, other than maybe just there may be some ship owners or people doing it who have a higher risk tolerance, and they just think, we're not actually going to get stopped, we'll just do it, and there's no need for us to spend our time and money changing.
Or fake transparency, where you admit some but don't admit the others. I don't know.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, there could be all these things happening behind the scenes, but yeah, it's a question that I'm not quite clear about the answer to yet.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Now, you recently visited the Port Operations Centre that kind of monitors all maritime traffic in the Singapore Strait. So what did you sort of learn from that trip, and did it change your understanding of the ghost ship landscape?
Yeah, it was absolutely fascinating. You know, it's like air traffic control, but for ships, and there are thousands being monitored and tracked. And it's they're really doing an impressive job, and And I feel like if they weren't doing it, there would be all these problems happening, all ships hitting each other and that sort of thing. So I think the thing I learned was really just the extent and the scale of the operation. There, if it's at any given time, there may be 1,000 or 1,500 vessels within the port of Singapore or transiting the strait, which is, I believe, just the busiest place on planet Earth for it. And the amount of human effort that goes into keeping this open and ensuring that there are no problems or collisions or anything which may prevent ships from freely transiting is enormous. And of course, if they ever get it wrong, if there was a big fire in the middle of the strait and ships got stuck and sunk, then they'd have huge global ramifications. I mean, all the trade that happens between Asia and Europe and the Middle East passes by Singapore, and that would all be disrupted. So that was very, very interesting. From a Shadow Fleet point of view, I think it struck me just kind of from what I understood, actually, you know, because ships have the right to transit, actually, from their point of view, I understood that they do, on the whole, try just to comply with the regulations of transiting in terms of showing your location accurately, in terms of, you know, buzzing in that you're coming, that sort of thing, because actually you don't want to bring attention to yourself by trying to hide. So it's kind of like they have the right to do it, therefore they do it properly, which was an interesting thing to realize, because occasionally I'd maybe been under the impression that they're trying to do it in a quite a clandestine or sneaky way, but that isn't actually the case, because they have got the right to pass it anyway.
Yeah, and obviously they're aware that if they cause a problem, it will make it harder for them to carry on doing what they're doing. Yeah. Yeah, because as I think you were saying earlier, there's a lot of economics involved in the Singapore Strait, and should something terrible happen and cause a blockage, a bit like with the port of Baltimore when the bridge collapsed, was it about a year and a bit ago, it caused a massive knock-on effect. So that strait got kind of semi-blocked for a while. That could cost billions, couldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it really would be. It would be a huge disaster for Singapore as a nation, but also just for the whole world if this piece of water was blocked. And it is, of course, is the reason why, you know, there's the Straits question in a theoretical military confrontation between China and America. If this piece of water is blocked and China can't access the Middle East, then where does it get its oil? Where does it get its gas to power its economy, to power its war machine? You know, so there's this huge strategic consideration from a global superpower situation point of view, from this tiny little piece of water. It's also why I guess the British had an interest in it back in the day as well. But it's saying,
yes.
So it's the Strait of Gibraltar or whatnot.
Yeah, the Straits are very important. And so there are probably some people listening thinking about, like, you know, Singapore should be cracking down on these fleets and things. So why is it so sort of difficult legally and diplomatically for Singapore to intervene and stop these ships?
They have a right under the United Nations Convention for the Law of the Sea in order to pass. It's also worth saying they're not passing in just in Singapore's waters. You know, Indonesia is the other side of the strait, Malaysia and the Strait of Malacca as well. So, you know, it's not just Singapore. When you start interfering with the rights of ships to trade, then you undermine the entire global system of maritime trade. And that's the crux of it, you know. And in my view, Singapore has benefited massively from free and open trade, and you know, it's got one of the busiest and largest ports in the world. So you wouldn't want to go outside of international norms and outside of international law to do something, especially when that can harm your own interests so much. So, you know, I think the position, in my opinion, is very consistent. It makes sense. It considers the other really important bit to add is that these sanctions are not Singapore's sanctions and not UN sanctions. Even they are American, European, you know, Canadian some from Australia. So they are kind of NATO and its allies have imposed these sanctions. And it's not for Singapore to enforce them. A Singaporean company which was trading with these companies would risk being sanctioned itself, and it would lose access to, you know, the global banking system and all sorts of things. So there is a real reason why you wouldn't want to trade with these companies, but that's a different... So you wouldn't want to trade with these ships or buy their oil, but that's a very different question to, do you want to interfere with their right of innocent passage to simply go once?
Yeah. Is there much talk in Singapore about these ships? And also, I suppose, about like how there are people abroad who are saying they should be doing something about it. Is there much of a sense of what's sort of going on?
There wasn't so much until I came along. But
so you've caused the debate.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that semi tongue in cheek and semi arrogantly. But you know, for example, that there will be, I believe, in the next couple of days, you know, a piece coming out on Channel News Asia about this. You know, that's when I was with the crew and we saw that zombie ship, and yeah, you know, that has entered into part of the discussion. It's not a huge national debate, but you know, but it's mentioned in the news and that sort of thing. So yeah, I know that, of course, from a government point of view, or the Port Authority, you know, keeping the straits open and avoiding any problems has to be a national priority. It has to be, because it's just so important for the economy here. Whether or not behind the scenes diplomatically, you know, there's been any pressure on Singapore from America or anything like that, I don't know. I don't even speculating. I haven't seen anything either way. But it's something that people are aware as happening. But I feel that the official answer as to why Singapore doesn't interfere with these is just the truth is the correct answer in terms of what does international law say, and what's in the national interest.
What misconceptions do outside observers, including Western diplomats, tend to have about Singapore's role?
I think I wouldn't be able to tell you in terms of diplomats, because I'm just not party for that sort of conversation. I think that there are people who have asked me, some of them happen to be Western, you know, whether or not Singapore trades with these ships, or, you know, buys the oil or that sort of thing. And the answer is, as far as I'm aware, an emphatic no. It really doesn't. And for all the reasons I mentioned, it's not really in its interest to touch them. So that doesn't happen. But yeah, you know, maybe, and that's one of the reasons why I'm quite careful as well in terms of how I present it. Maybe there could be a perception of, oh, well, it's just there. Surely you've got to do something about it. But for all the reasons I've said in terms of the rights of vessels to freely transit the straits, it isn't the case. And ships really do it.
You've been approached by people with diplomatic or potentially intelligence adjacent roles about your sort of observations. Can you tell us anything about these sort of conversations that you've had?
Yeah, I can. So I wouldn't want to say too much, but you know, I've had people who have asked to meet, and I have had quite a lot of questions about what's going on. And the two most notable are somebody who asked if I could send them photos of particular ships and was happy to pay for them. I happened to be away when that ship passed, so my very, very modest earning opportunity passed me by. And then, yeah, I've had people who've been interested in questions and sort of pertaining to kind of like the, you know, what the authorities know or don't know, or whether it involves. And I had to say, honestly, you're asking me questions I just have no idea about. And that was the truth. I don't know. I can tell you as much as is open source or as much as I post on my account. But beyond that, no, I'm not part of anything. I first felt that they were barking up the wrong tree, but I keep saying I've literally never seen one of these ships stop off in the waters here or get service here or that sort of thing. They just pass by.
Yeah. Do you see similarities between what you do and sort of open source intelligence style, you know, sort of intelligence gathering?
Yeah, I do. There's certainly some overlaps. And certainly when I've tried to be a little bit more sophisticated and then begin to look at satellite imagery to try and work out exactly where a ship that I saw went to men who it met. there are pieces of software which are available at a commercial level, which are, you know, I'd have to pay many years' salary to have access for a day. But you know, they have these huge swathes of data, and then you know you can really begin to go, okay, so that vessel has been on this particular journey, and then it met that ship, and you can really begin to patch it all together. And I'd love to do it at some point, but it's out of my capability.
Yeah. And why do you think sort of people like yourself are sort of better positioned than maybe official organizations to sort of spot this activity?
I think part of it is just a question of resource and time. As in, I'm very, very happy to, you know, to quickly pop up and take my pictures, and it doesn't take me too long. It's quite easy to do it. I feel that, and also location is a huge part of it. You could be sat in, you know, in the CIA's headquarters and looking at all your satellite imagery, but actually to physically be on my rooftop with a big enough camera to zoom in and take a close-up picture, you see a different side to the ship, you see how it's painted, you see what it says on the name, and you just kind of can't get that sort of close-up without either A, taking a vessel out onto the high seas where you have to know where it is, or B, being in Singapore or on the other side of Indonesia and then just seeing it as it comes that close to land. So I think the geography has to be a big part of this one.
Let's take a break and be right back with more. Random question. What has been the reaction of sort of your friends, family, and colleagues about this?
They find it, like, it depends on which friends. Some go, oh, you know, you're always stirring the pot. You found another way to do it. So, which I find funny. I think, you know, some people have just ensured that I was careful. You know, it's easy to get in your head that you're going to upset Putin and he'll ask you to your assassination. And I've, or, you know, like I said before, I don't really think it's that dangerous. I'd kind of be thrilled if I got to that high level that people cared about who I was. But you know, but yeah, that's been a little bit. I think most of it is just people find it very, very cool, like very, very interesting. It's like, wow, it's amazing that you can see this, and it's amazing that people are paying attention, and you know, going to be on the TV, going to be on a podcast, that sort of thing. You know, I think people are just very happy that I found a hobby that I'm enjoying, and I can have interesting conversations as a result of that.
Yeah, fantastic. So how effective do you think the sanctions sort of regime is, given what you are seeing on a day-to-day basis?
It's a good question. I mean, obviously the sanctions cover a lot more than just the oil that I see being shipped, and you know, there are price caps and all that sort of thing. I think that it's sort of have an impact. Clearly there are easy ways to get around it, and clearly there are people who are motivated to get around it, you know. So I have no doubt that it's made it much harder for Russia and Iran to earn oil revenues. I imagine it probably has taken a big chunk away from their oil revenues, but it's not zero. So yeah, this is my opinion, but in my view, you know, maybe when Trump started talking about, you know, sanctioning countries which are buying this oil or putting up tariffs, that kind of has to be a bit. But then you get into the big question of, particularly if it's China, for example, well, how much of a economic tit for tat are we willing to accept in order to achieve those goals there? And that's obviously a difficult question.
Yeah, yeah. And have you noticed the behavior of these ships changing at all? Are they becoming like more brazen or more sophisticated in hiding over the time that you've been observing them?
There are a lot more of them now. And even versus when I started, and now we begin to see ships which are kind of newly added onto sanctions lists, and it's always a cat and mouse event. So I think it's happening a lot more as some of those sanctions have been tightened. In terms of the behavior, I haven't other than the way that they kind of flag hop and change their names quite regularly, or how they, you know, all try and go to one other nation's ship registry, I haven't noticed a particular change in behavior. But you know, I have more recently seen ships traveling west with oil in them. So when they've got oil in them, they sit very low in the water. Normally when they're traveling east, they're filled because they're coming from the Middle East going to a buyer in Asia.
Mm.
More recently, I've seen them coming the other direction, low in the water, which to me suggests they have sailed past empty, filled up somewhere in the South China Sea, and then coming back the other direction, probably to India, is the most obvious place buying it. So that could be a new change of behavior. And that could be oil that's coming from Russia's specific ports and going in that direction.
Interesting. Yeah, you can learn a lot actually from the, yeah, as you talk about with the direction of ships and who's potentially receiving this oil. It's quite a good way of sort of getting an eye on stuff, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Gosh, that's really cool. And then how worried should we be about an environmental disaster from these sort of aging and poorly insured tankers operating in these waters?
It's definitely a risk. That obviously, there's a huge spectrum. Like I've seen from satellite imagery, oil spills happen, which is obviously not great, but being very honest, you know, in the grand scheme of the ocean, it's literally a drop in the ocean. So it you know, it hasn't had a huge environmental impact that's affected me or other people. There is a risk, of course, if there was a collision in the Straits, you know, in the worst case scenarios, that really could be a problem. They've also got very, very strict protocol and disaster planning to activate should there ever be a collision to sort of contain that, because it applies just as much to a non-shadow fleet oil tanker as it does a shadow fleet one. The question of cleanup and who pays for it and insurance, that's where it becomes very complicated if it's a shadow fleet tanker. So I think it's a risk. It's of my personal view that the greater risk to planet Earth is through the revenues that this sale takes, you know, and the wars that can fund.
Yeah, yeah. And how sustainable do you think this sort of shadow fleet is long term? Do you think this is going to kind of continue on, or do you think it might wind down when the war in Ukraine's finished?
I think if hypothetically these countries stop being under sanctions, then the whole thing would end, because there'd be no need to do that. You know, you can just legitimately sail your ship and then legitimately sell your oil. So why would you bother going through all that rigmarole to do it? So yeah, at some point in theory, that could all end. For as long as the war continues or these countries stay under sanctions, I imagine it will continue.
Yeah, yeah.
And I suspect inversely, the tighter the sanctions, the more we'll see of it, because they need to get revenues however they can. And this is probably one of the best ways that we can do it.
Yeah, no, indeed. So just moving into sort of wrapping up. So are there any sort of photographs or video clips that best capture the strangeness of the danger of the ghost ship world that we haven't discussed?
In terms of danger, it would probably just be some of the satellite photos, which I've looked before. And, you know, how you can see something. Yeah, there's spills of oil and that sort of thing happening. The ones that we've mentioned, particularly the zombie ships, both the same name but looking different, I think that's the best visual representation of the strangeness of this world.
Yes, yeah. I noticed you posted up a clip the other day of a Navy encounter with a shadow fleet. What was that about, that one?
Yeah, that one, I think, now that I've asked people who are more in the know, I think that was honestly just a coincidence. So I was maybe being a little bit... Very truthfully, it was very visually striking. It was a ship that, you know, that made quite a sudden turn, and then just behind it there was a Singapore Navy vessel, which then sort of turned around as well nearby it. But I, from everything I know, that's more just a coincidence from my viewing angle, and they weren't really, you know, they weren't intervening there. And certainly that shadow fleet tanker just sailed on a little bit later. So yeah, it was visually very striking. And I thought I'd captured something amazing, but actually I hadn't. So yeah, the importance of kind of fact checking and you know, not being too alarmist in your claims. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. And what's sort of next for you and your Instagram channel?
Good question. I think for me, I'd like to continue. I found it really, really interesting. I would love to, if I ever get the opportunity, you know, to get more access or to go on a ship and go up close to them and get more photos like that. Otherwise, for as long as people are interested and I'm interested, I'm going to keep, you know, looking at these pictures and sharing them. I think that's the main thing.
Fantastic. And is there anything else you'd like to add before we sort of wrap up today that we may not have discussed or that's important to you, or any sort of final thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think we've covered everything. You know, what I would just say is it is, you know, wherever you are in the world where you can see ships, you know, there's so much going on. And I just urge people to download the, you know, marine tracking app and just begin thinking about it, because everything you own or see or eat has probably come on one of these. And when you begin wrapping your head around just like how complex and how interconnected global supply chains are and how important shipping is to your life, even if you forget about anything kind of clandestine or illicit happening, it is just such a fascinating topic. And, you know, it's only because I moved to Singapore and I see it every day and there are hundreds of ships passing that I ever begun to think about it. But yeah, anyone listening here, it's a really fascinating topic. So I urge you to just give it a more thought.
Fantastic. Well, Remy, where can listeners sort of connect with you and follow you?
So yeah, my Instagram page is @SG, so SG ship spotting. And that's my main page. It's my only page. I do upload the videos on TikTok. I don't use TikTok. I don't really like TikTok, but somebody was doing it on my behalf, so I thought I'd do it myself. But yeah, the Instagram page is the main thing. And you know, my direct messages are open. So yeah, anyone who's listening has questions or thoughts, even better, some really cool footage that they have captured, then yeah, I'd love to see that.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you very much, Chris. And yes, such a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
Listening. This is Secrets and Spies.